This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com and executive director of the World Sweeping Association. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with two gentlemen that represent Isuzu Commercial Truck of America. One is Mike Rossetti, who's the director of field operations for that company, and the other is Jim Barnes, who is the manager of regional fleet sales for Isuzu Commercial Truck. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good to be here.
Thank you, Ranger. Appreciate the opportunity. This is Jim Barnes. Thanks for the opportunity to give it to Mike and myself to talk about Isuzu and our product. And we've been very fortunate since 1984 to be able to sell Isuzu's into the sweeper market. In fact, we introduced the sweeper market to cab over vehicles back like in 1984, 1985. So we, both Mike and myself, appreciate this opportunity to talk about the product and try to answer any questions that you and your guys have.
That's a wonderful opportunity on behalf of the sweeping industry as well. We are specifically talking about the changes in the chassis that have taken place in the last few years. One of those, they're of course mandated changes, and one of those is the DPF system, or the diesel particulate filtration system. This is relatively new. It requires a certain amount of maintenance that wasn't historically required on engines and wasn't in the sweeping industry. And we had an article previous to the one that we're discussing here that discussed some of the problems that some different contractors were having with their sweepers. And we thought that maybe speaking firsthand to some of these issues would really shed the correct amount of light on all of it. Let me ask you, Mike. Now, we discussed parking lot sweeper issues. We didn't have any street sweeping issues that have been reported. Do you think that there is something different about parking lot sweepers that are causing these troubles, these sporadic or periodic troubles, or is it something that just can be addressed by proper maintenance and so forth?
That's a great question. It's not just parking lot sweepers. Let me give you just a little history of the DPF system, if I may. As you said, it was all mandated, and this system actually came out in 2007 or on our 2008 trucks that we had to reduce exhaust emissions greatly. So we utilized a diesel particulate filter, and it's just not Isuzu. It was all diesels that were manufactured here in North America that had to have the same type of technology. So if you were to put them all aside, whether they're parking lot sweepers or they're over-the-road trucks, the basic theory behind a diesel particulate filter is the same. A diesel particulate filter has a catalyst in front of it that generates heat, and it has to generate enough heat to start an actual regeneration of the soot particles that are trapped within the diesel particulate filter. And in order to do this, the vehicle has to be running at a rate of speed of in excess of at least 30 miles an hour, but because vehicles who operate not only parking lot sweepers but any other type of applications, if they operate lower than that, then unfortunately as the exhaust system, okay, runs much cooler and it doesn't generate enough heat to actually start a regeneration or keep the excessive soot buildup. So that's a little background on the DPS. So whether it's a parking lot sweeper or what other application that continually runs, okay, below 30 miles an hour, we'll have kind of the same concerns that the parking lot sweepers guys have.
Well, that's a very good explanation. Because it's mandated, it's not like there's any way to get around it other than for those contractors out there, and you know who you are who are trying to keep their old chassis alive. You know, it's time to get with the program and learn to handle your chassis maintenance correctly so that you can have new chassis and not have any concerns about it. What can a sweeper operator do when we do have a situation where a lot of times we're driving for, 5 miles an hour for an extended period of time, whether you are street sweeping out on the street or in a parking lot, and then maybe only going across the street at 30 miles an hour and doing it again for another half hour, 45 minutes, and rinse and repeat. So what kind of special considerations there are challenges there to keeping this DPF filtration clean. What are your suggestions?
Most of it is driver education. This is where we find out with all facets of different operations of our vehicles that, you know, driver education is the most important. A lot of times is that these people who do low-speed operations, kind of like your sweepers, you know, when they drive from the shop to the sweeper application or the parking lot areas, maybe, in excess of maybe 10 or 15 miles, which would possibly do a regeneration within that time. But if they're very short trips and they don't, they're not able to get to those speeds, the vehicle is equipped with a warning light on the dashboard. And when it goes into a regeneration, it actually will turn, the light will turn green and indicate that it's through a it's performing a regeneration process, which is doesn't require any driver interaction at all. I would just, the recommendation is just operate the vehicle like you're doing, and the regeneration should take place. If for some reason it's interrupted because you're changing idle speed, you know, quickly, or doing something that would cause the exhaust temperature to go down, that regeneration process would suspend itself until it gets into the next optimum spot, and then it would start regenerating again. But let's say that doesn't happen. And what happens is as that soot starts to accumulate more in the filter and the back pressure starts coming, what will happen is that green light, it'll now turn to yellow. And the suggestion at that point in time is that it just turns to yellow and says, hey, we need to go ahead and do a regeneration. So at that point in time, the driver can initiate a selectable or a manual regeneration process by sitting, you know, putting the vehicle in park, and of course always put your emergency brake on when you're not moving or when you're in park, and then you can push the button, and then the vehicle will automatically go into a regeneration. The green light will come on at that point in time, and it takes maybe anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes to perform that regeneration. And then once the regeneration stops, the lights go off, and then he can operate the vehicle as normal.
So there might be a situation where he is out in the parking lot in the middle of the night and he just has to stop for 20 minutes and do a regeneration.
If that is correct. If the dashboard indicates that if he gets a yellow light that he needs to do a regeneration, let's say that he's not in a safe area or he just cannot perform a regeneration when that yellow light comes on, if he keeps going farther for, unfortunately, as I don't know exactly how many miles it would be, but it will then go from a yellow light to a red light. And then at the red light, he definitely has to stop off. The driver would have to stop off and perform a regeneration at that point in time. If the regeneration is not completed after a red light and the driver ignores it, then it'll go into a D-rated mode, all right, where it would limit the power of the vehicle. And then at that point in time, unfortunately, as the vehicle would be have to take into an Isuzu dealership to have the have a regeneration initiated by a scan tool.
Right.
Yes.
Do you think it's a good idea to remind everyone, too, that during the manual regeneration cycle, the driver cannot touch the accelerator pedal?
That is correct. We can't put the brake on. We need to just allow it. Once it goes into the regeneration process, the driver needs to just let it finish, okay? If he goes ahead and puts it in gear or gives an acceleration or something along that line, it will actually suspend it or stop the regeneration process. A lot of drivers once think that if they start a regeneration process and they see the green light come on and it starts its regen, they go, okay, it's in regen, I can continue driving. And then what they'll do is they will put the vehicle in gear and start doing their sweeping or their or whatever else they're doing, but it will stop the regeneration process where many people feel that it's still continuing behind the scenes. So that's a very good question.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it sounds like the regeneration process stops if you hit the brakes, if you hit the accelerator. I mean, you need to put it in park and, you know, essentially, if you can, go do some backpack blowing or change out your garbage bag liners or something during that process, ideally.
That is correct. And you can always tell if the regeneration process is suspended for whatever reason or interrupted, that green light will now go out. So let's say that the green light is on, you're doing a regeneration, and he goes ahead and puts his foot on the gas and puts it into gear or the brake or whatever, the green light will then go out, and that's indicating that the regeneration process has stopped.
Right. So ideally, it sounds like you get out of the truck chassis unless it's unsafe to do that, or, you know, certainly be cautious, because anybody sitting behind the wheel, it's pretty easy to for 20 minutes to touch the accelerator, touch the brake. I know that one of the people that we interviewed for our prior article that was having some difficulties said that they took on the idea of just doing a regeneration after every shift, after an 8-hour shift. Is that something that potentially would solve the problem?
Well, usually, you know, every shift, I think that's extreme, that we don't see too many people, that the DPF filter needs to be regenerated that often. In the Isuzu product, you push the regeneration button once, the light will flash, and then you push it again, and then it'll start a regeneration process. If it does not need a regeneration at the end of the shift, you cannot force the truck to regen if the vehicle determines that it is not necessary. So if they want to do that at the end of the shift, that would be fine, and it would only go into regeneration. The only thing that I would ask is that if it does go into a regeneration, we need to let it complete itself all the way through. Because, again, if you initiate a manual or a selectable regen on a vehicle and you interrupt it, all right, and don't let it finish, the automatic portion of the regeneration, and like let's say you were driving down the road, it is inhibited. You always have to let it complete if you do a selectable regen.
So to be clear, if the DPF filtration system is not a certain amount of dirty, and I get back to the shop and we hit it as part of our normal operating instructions for our driver, we say, after the end of every shift, do a regeneration, get out of the truck and go wash it or, you know, do something else, let it sit there during that entire process. It won't go into that mode if it isn't sufficiently dirty.
That is correct. Exactly. But I do have a question, though. Approximately a normal parking lot sweeping evening, let's say, how many miles are we talking from the time we go ahead and start the parking lot sweeping till the time at the end of the shift? Approximately how many miles would be normal?
That's a great question, and unfortunately it's highly variable because some guys, and these are the people that probably are not having a problem, might have to drive 45 minutes, in some cases even as much as an hour, to get to another location. And then, essentially, they have a route of their 8 hours that are really close by. And so they're going at 5 miles an hour around the entire parking lot and then going just a very brief distance to another parking lot and going 5 miles an hour again. So it's hard to say how many, you know, miles that might be, whether that's, you know, 5 or 20. It probably wouldn't be more than that at, you know, low speed. Although if you say, okay, let's say we're going at 5 miles an hour and we have 8 hours, then that's, you know, 40 miles of slow driving in an 8-hour shift. But there certainly is movement from one locale to another periodically.
Then my suggestion would be is, and we've used this with other sweepers companies, and they've done parking lot and then also street sweeping too, and it's been very, very successful, is that maybe, you know, once a week is do a selectable regeneration, and I wouldn't worry about it any sooner than that unless the indicator lights on the dashboard indicate differently. The problem we have is when the lights come on, we find that many people do disregard them, and it ends up, you know, going through it gets up plugged up even more and more and more, and then it goes into what we call the limp home mode.
Well, of course we ignore them. We want to go home.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I do agree.
What I get out of that, and let me try to enhance your suggestion a little bit, and if that's incorrect, please say so. But they might keep track of how often, you know, in a logbook, how often the automatic regeneration light comes on for that particular sweeper that's going out on, you know, a very similar route every night. And it might be, and I'm thinking of, I'm a country living guy, and so I have a water filtration system that takes iron out of my water, and they have this stuff called pot perm that goes into a back flush mode, and it puts this stuff into the solution tank and then strips out all the iron that's been picked up over time. Well, in the summer, where we have low water months, the iron is more frequent, and so you have to back flush more often. In the winter months, you don't have to back flush, you know, hardly at all. And it seems like if there's enough variation in the system, going back to the DPF idea, is let's log how often the automatics come on. And then can you tell me, I mean, do we have to be at 80% to an automatic flushing for us to be able to do a manual flush, or how close does that have to be? And they might be able to see by tracking that in the logbook when they could safely say, okay, every you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays or whatever for this sweeper. For another sweeper, might be a week and a half. That you know that if you do a manual regeneration, it should cycle because it's dirty enough, and that should be often enough so you don't have to get stopped on your route to do a regeneration at the same time. So is that something that might be helpful? Is there a way that they might be able to track, to say, let's start it once a week, but keep track, and it may be, you know, more often, it may be less often.
Yeah, Ranger, I think that's a heck of an idea. That would work well because, like you said, is the vehicles, depending on how they're operated, will act differently. So I think that's an outstanding idea.
Well, I think ideally they don't want to be out in the middle of a parking lot. It is dangerous out there at night, and, you know, and weather dependent and so forth. And I think it's so easy for an operator to sit behind the wheel during a manual regeneration and forget they happen to hit the brake or they happen to hit the accelerator as they're trying to pull their lunch out to do something for that 20 minutes of fiddling their thumbs. So we'll take that as just an idea for listeners to give a try. We talked about what happened when operators ignore the warning notices. That was one of the questions I was going to ask. And that's something that you just really need to drill into your operators, is what to do in the different situations when the DPF light comes on.
Right. We do have three stages. That is, that when the green light comes on, it's going into regeneration. When the yellow light comes on, it's telling you that it's recommended to do a regeneration, whether you take it out on the road or you do a selectable. But then you hit the red, okay, and it's telling you, look, you really need to do a regeneration. And this doesn't happen within a couple of miles. We're talking, you know, unless there's damage to the filter, you know, we're talking 30 or 40 miles between these lights, but it also depends on the condition of the filter. So, you know, if the filter is extremely plugged, you know, it may go from yellow to red within a few short miles, but it depends on how plugged that filter really is. But the majority of the time, you know, there's ample warning between the lights.
One thing I'm unclear about is the automatic regenerations that just occur when people, let's say a long-haul trucker, is he having to stop and regenerate, or does that just regenerate at high speeds for him?
Anything over 30 miles an hour, if it starts to restrict, all of a sudden, you know, on our truck or a over-the-road Class 8, as they're driving down the road, all of a sudden the green light will come on. It'll do its regeneration, and it'll just shut it off because, of course, at highway speeds or speeds over 30 miles an hour, again, it's important that the exhaust system creates enough heat to turn the soot into ash, and that's what the regeneration process is.
So what I'm thinking is we need to develop some kind of rule of thumb for the parking lot sweeping professionals where when the green light comes on and you're almost at the end of the shift and you know you're going X miles back to your base at higher than 30 miles an hour, that you would know, well, I can just keep going on do the rest of my route and I'll be fine. And then the yellow light comes on, the situation changes, but the rule of thumb would be that if the green light comes on and you're X number of miles, you only have to do two more lots, and then you know you're going to be heading back to the base, then we can just work with the green light on and then finish up and go. We won't lose any time.
Right, exactly. If the green light comes on and they get down to lower speeds and they have two more lots they need to do, the green light may come off, okay? And when he drives from one lot to another lot, if it's a short distance, the green light may come back on again. And then it may go off because he's doing low speeds, and then when he gets on the road on the way home, the green light may come on again. My suggestion would be is I wouldn't worry about anything, okay, unless the yellow light comes on. I would operate the vehicle and just let it do its thing, because we also have some people who get very worried when the green light comes on and they feel that they have to pull over and stuff. They don't. Just operate the vehicle, and then because it's doing what it's supposed to. And if the yellow light comes on, then you need driver interaction somehow. But other than that, I wouldn't pay any attention to it.
So even if the yellow light comes on and you're just finishing your shift and you have, you know, another half an hour of sweeping, you should be good to do that, and then you roll back to base and it takes care of itself.
Exactly. It's kind of like you know how your low fuel light comes on? You know, you're not out of fuel, so you've got some time, you know, another 20 miles before you run out of fuel, that you have to start thinking about heading to a gas station. It's the same type of theory. If the yellow light comes on, okay, you got to start thinking about regeneration. And then if you get to the red light, you really need to start thinking about regeneration.
Yeah, makes sense. That's a great explanation. There was one of the contractors had a, it turned out, had a dipstick problem. His situation was apparently he was allegedly outfitted with a wrong dipstick, and so he was putting in, I think it was 2.5 quarts more oil into his truck to make the dipstick read that it was full. His fix was remarkably easy once they figured that out, was just to put 2.5 quarts less oil in, into his chassis. Is that anything that's widespread, or is that just a, one of those ticks that just occurs with any industry, with any company?
Let me tell you how that, you know, what happened. Back in 2009, we track our warranty pretty good because we want to make sure that we don't have any trends taken off to where we have issues with vehicles that we need to look at an engineering side. And we noticed that when we went to a closed PCV system, which was in 2008, we used to have what they called a road draft tube where the crankcase pressures would just exhaust out on the ground while you were driving. And of course, because of the emission laws, we can't do that anymore. So we have a closed PCV system, so it reburns. And in a closed PCV system, you have normal crankcase pressure that is developed in any combustion engine, and it has small oil particles in it. And what happens was is that it started getting into the intake system, and we were having dealerships, unfortunately, feel that once they saw oil in the intake system, that the turbochargers were malfunctioning, and we had bad seals in the turbocharger. So what we did was is we went back and looked at it and found that if we dropped the oil down approximately 2 to 2.5 quarts, that it would limit the amount of oil that is in the intake system, and hopefully, and it worked, the technicians would stop diagnosing this as a bad turbocharger. That was the reason why we changed the dipsticks, not because of regeneration issues or anything like this. It was because people were diagnosing the turbochargers as being bad when technically they were not. If you remember back before, during the road draft tubes or the old days, is that air intake systems were perfectly clean. There was no oil particles in them at all. When we went to the closed PCV system, they started seeing this and thinking that the turbochargers were bad.
I see. So is there anything that a contractor needs to do if he's having DPF trouble? Are there any questions that he needs to ask at his dealership regarding that, or to consider with his dipstick or the amount of oil in his chassis?
Well, that's, you know, that's something that we can definitely look at, okay, but there are many, many factors that could cause what we call frequent regeneration. Starting in 2008 model year, we have a, it's called a data recording module, and what it does is it'll actually watch how the driver is operating the vehicle, if he's, you know, the speeds that he's going, you know, how fast he puts his foot on the gas, how, you know, how fast does he put his, or how hard does he put his foot on the brakes. And we look at fuel economy, we look at idle time, you know, we look at city, you know, driving time and highway driving time. And any Isuzu dealership out there is equipped to pull this health report down, and we can tell exactly how the vehicle is being operated, and we can make suggestions, okay, at that time, on whether or not if there is an issue with the truck, or is there an issue with a driver's driving habits that could, you know, help with regeneration process.
Well, that's a great tip, I think. So that's something that a contractor can do, is to take their truck in and, for probably what's a nominal charge, get this information downloaded and have a readout that you can actually talk to their driver about.
Correct. And it's not so much to penalize the driver. It's just to show them, you know, we, when we drive in our daily vehicles and with work and everything, we really don't pay too much attention on how we drive the vehicles. We just go from point A to point B, and the stuff, our subconscious basically takes over and drives the vehicle there. We use this tool that maybe if we could ask the driver to, instead of flooring it to come off the light, or waiting until you're right onto a red light and you slam on the brakes, that we can actually extend brake life, and we can also extend or increase fuel economy dramatically by just the way you operate the vehicle. And by, you know, extending the fuel economy, that's putting more, keeping more profits in the owner's pocket, you know, if he doesn't have to put as much fuel in.
Absolutely, and especially for those that don't have a GPS system that might track those kinds of things. That seems like it would be a great resource for the contractor. I'm reminded of a contractor I spoke with several years ago, and he was having trouble with transmissions. He was going through transmissions, and so he ended up getting a GPS system, and one of the things it tracked was whether the vehicle was at a stop before it went from forward gear into a reverse gear. And he found that that was one of the things his operators weren't doing. And the punchline to the story was that he had tracked this over a year and a half. He was saving $2,000 a month on average in his fleet on not having to do this transmission work. So those kinds of diagnostics and analysis can be enormously helpful. And I think that's one of the real gems that has come out of our interview here, is that that is available and something that a contractor can get with his chassis. I had another question. We had one of our contractors that asked about sulfur parts per million now in fuel, using biofuels, that sort of thing. There are some people out there that are using biofuel for their in their diesels. What does this have as implications for a DPF system?
Well, the ultra low sulfur fuel, which is below, which is 15, you know, parts per million, was mandated when we came out with this with the diesel particulate filters, all right, to cut down on the soot. In all the fuel out there, I don't even think, other than farm fuel, I don't think you can buy anything over 15 parts per million. But in regards to the biodiesel, you know, most of our fuel stations, we found out, that blend the fuel with a little bit of bio. Now, we only recommend 5% bio on our vehicles. And one of the reasons why is because it's like anything else, is that if you get good quality fuel, just like you get good quality biofuel, all right, you usually don't have any problems. Where we found that the issues was, is that the biofuel, people were, this is the extreme, but, you know, they would pull up to a spot that has biofuel in it, they would fill their vehicles up, and they would actually have, kind of like if you grease, you have a greasy pan after you do bacon, and then you let it sit, and it turns all white. Extreme cases, we've actually seen where the inlet pipe of a fuel pipe actually had that same fat content that was in there, because they were using vegetable oil and things like that. So that's extreme. But all the stations that we have out here usually have good, clean biofuel, some sort of a blend in it. But it's whether you have good, clean fuel or bio, you shouldn't have DPF issues. If you have bad fuel, okay, with contaminants with water or dirt or things like that, that would cause a restriction in the fuel filter or plug up an injector or cause an injector to not spray correctly, will cause an insufficient burn in the combustion chamber. And an insufficient burn basically creates the soot. You can tell a vehicle that is not running right, or a diesel in the old days when you saw, you know, they put their foot on the gas and all of a sudden this big black cloud, you know, comes out. And you don't see that on our trucks very much anymore, because they have these diesel particulate filters that will stop that type of, that collect that soot. But that soot has to be burned. So if you've got an engine that is not running correctly, you have bad fuel, or if an air filter is plugged up, you know, it's restricted somehow, those little things will cause insufficient burn, which will cause frequent regen.
Well, I can see where that would certainly be a problem, because let's face it, that those particulates didn't burn the first time. Now we're trying to put them into a system to burn them a second time. And then if they don't burn, you know, they're added to whatever's in the system to burn a third time or whatever. So it is really critical to keep the DPF system, as well as all of your other parts to the chassis system, maintained. And that's another takeaway I think people should have out of this, is to maintain those vehicles and make sure you're, especially today, I think it's critically important to read your service manuals, read your maintenance manuals, make sure that whoever's doing your mechanic work is familiar with these kinds of systems.
You know, one of the other thing that I'd like to add to this is, and a lot of people don't, again, it's education at our driver's level, and what you just stated about reading the owner's manual in the maintenance intervals is vital. These DPF filters, when they go ahead and do a regeneration, they turn the soot to ash, and then over time, that ash needs to be cleaned. And it's just not the Isuzu's, it's whoever has a DPF filter, they have to have, they have service intervals. And a lot of people in the, only see in the book that diesel particulate filter needs to be removed and cleaned every 100,000 miles. But what we also have is it's either 100,000 miles or 3,000 hours. And what happens is you have many, especially parking lot sweepers, okay, or low-speed operators that may, you know, only have 50,000 miles on their vehicle, but they have thousands of hours over, you know, on their truck. An example, we had one vehicle that was used as a PTO for a well drilling, and he had 11,000 miles on the vehicle, but had over 12,000 operating hours on the vehicle. And so that filter should have been cleaned many, many times. So I encourage, when you get your health report on the 2008 through 2010, that the health report will tell you how many hours are on it. And I have to reemphasize that at 3,000 hours, the filter needs to be cleaned because you have to remove the ash out of that filter.
I couldn't agree more, and that is certainly something with parking area sweepers. I can't tell you how many times over the 25 years I've been involved with the sweeping industry that somebody will talk about the great sweeper that they got from a mall and how they really thought they were getting a great deal because it only had this many miles on it. And actually, that's a lot of times one of the worst sweepers you can get is one that's just been sitting at a mall, never goes fast, and has an inordinate number of hours for its miles. So that's yet another area where that similar thing is true.
You know, you have, if I might add one more thing, is the industry, depending on the operation or what type of engine, whether it's an industrial engine or a Class 8 or whatever, but the average is about 33 miles to every hour that is on there. So that instance I was telling you about, that other vehicle that had only 11,000 miles on it but had an absorbent amount of hours, technically that vehicle had well over 300,000 miles or 400,000 miles on it because of the hours. People don't look at that, so that's a very good point.
So one of the things we might recommend here, it seems, would be to get this report and then see how your hours and your miles are, and then change your filtration, your service intervals, based on whatever that multiple is that you come up with.
That is correct. On our 2011 model years and newer, the hours are actually in the instrument cluster. You can actually tell. We made it because the hours are so important on them, and maybe some of your parking lot sweeper guys may have hour meters, you know, already on the vehicles that they could go ahead and monitor that without having a health report. But I would recommend at least have one health report if you've never done it, just to see what it is. And I bet you the worst case scenario is you can improve your driving habits and increase your fuel economy, which would lower your total cost of ownership.
Well, plus you can have a comparison between your different operators.
Sure.
And they can, you know, nobody wants to be at the low end of the totem pole when Bob over there is doing a great job and you're not. So I think that's very good advice. Is there anything else that questions I didn't know enough to ask, things that weren't covered? One thing for sure that I want to bring out here is what the chain of command should be if somebody is having DPF filter troubles. They go to their dealer first and know you can open an actual claim or some such, I'm not sure what the wording is there. Can you go over what they should do when they suspect they're having trouble?
My recommendation definitely would be to contact your local Isuzu dealership, you know, consult with them. The health report is always a very good tool, all right, to start to understand, you know, how the vehicle is operating. Within this report also, it tells you what percentage of regenerations are actually completed. So let's say if it requested 1,000 regenerations over its lifetime, on a 2008, 750 of them have been done. Well, then the math says your 75% completion rate is pretty decent. Every single time the vehicle requests a regeneration, unless you're going nothing but over the road, you're going to interrupt them. So a lower percentage rate, you know, down in the 70s is really not that bad. But consult your Isuzu dealership. And, of course, if there is still questions, and we're really concerned about our customers, all right, because as Jim stated, we have thousands of these vehicles out there, okay, even with the DPF systems that are operating and they're not having issues, that if you do have questions on it, you know, is to contact our consumer relations department, you know, if the dealership is if you've got concerns or questions, you know, about being handled at our Isuzu dealer.
Well, I think that's certainly excellent advice, and I want to put in a 2 cents worth here. People will read in the previous article, one of the contractors said, well, you know, and here's what happened, and I'm not ever going to buy an Isuzu chassis again. That's not the answer. That's like having an email address that has your company's domain in it, and now you're getting a lot of spam, and so you change your email address. That's not it. You get a spam filter. And what's happening, you know, Isuzu is the premier supplier of chassis for the parking lot sweeping industry. They're very maneuverable, have wonderful visibility, turning radius, and width that goes on and on. So instead, make the time, the effort, the education out there, contractors, to make sure that you're working with a dealership that you can communicate with, get the answers that you need, get the follow-up that you need. And that way, you're with the vehicle that you want to be in. You know how happy you were when you bought it. And then keep it up. Your resale value stays higher, of course, that way too. And if you at first have trouble getting the answers, keep moving on it. You can open a claims ticket, I'm sure, if that's what needs to be done. But don't give up. You say, Mike, there are thousands and thousands of these vehicles out there. They're working just fine. We have five or six contractors who say, oh, well, here's all the problems we've had. That's a very small group of people. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah, but I'd also like to add is if there are people out there that are having issues, is I encourage them to get with the Isuzu dealers or get with us, all right, because, you know, the sweeping industry is very important to Isuzu, and a lot of it is just maybe education that we need to do a better job at Isuzu, and maybe the owners need to do a better job with their drivers, because I know sometimes they have multiple drivers, but I think if we work together, we can make sure that the vehicle is operating right. We don't have these issues.
Well, very good. I think that's as good a place to leave it as any, unless you have something further to add, or if you do, Jim.
No, I think I'm fine. I've learned a lot myself in this conversation. So thanks for involving Mike and myself and all of us at Isuzu in this type dialogue.
You bet. Very glad for you to take the time. We'll have contact information, that everybody's appropriate contact information for the Isuzu Commercial Truck of America with the article. Gentlemen, I truly do appreciate the time you've taken to explain this, and it's the best explanation that I've heard, and I've learned an awful lot today as well.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks a lot.